Chapter 30. Rami. There's another ward, Fallen. The characters have all retreated back to their books. Good. No use they experience dying when they haven't even lived. That is what will happen. No use pretending at softness here and now. Malthus will break down our pitiful wards, crush our paltry resistance, and the rebellion will be over. Hell cannot touch the books themselves, but she won't need to once she's defeated me. She will pull the foundations from the unwritten wing, and all will fall into chaos. Order requires a mind, requires comprehension. Without a librarian to order it, the unwritten stories of future generations will be lost. I can't win against Malthus, but I can't surrender to her either. Both paths lead to the destruction of the things I swore to protect. But this is a fairy tale. When have we ever remained on the path? Librarian Poppaea Iulia, 48 BCE. The wake of silence that Claire had left at the table lingered. Rami had a clear view of the hunched shoulders and ruffled feathers from his post away from the table. He felt like an outsider, which was nothing new. But worse, he felt like an intruder. The gathered librarians were not all as emotionally contained as Claire, and what she'd said had struck each of them with different wounds. Echo, wearing her son's form, peered introspectively into the middle distance. The gnarled knuckles of Bjorn's hands tightened around his untouched mug of tea while he bickered with the Duat librarian. Rami hadn't caught their names, and even if he had, they all seemed like distant concerns compared to the way Hero leaned back in his chair, relaxed as ever on the surface, but meditatively cracking his knuckles one by one. A sound like thunder nearly startled Hero out of his chair. It had everyone on their feet, thankfully, because the next tremor that shook through the library crashed a tower of books across the conference table.
"Stay with the librarians."
Hero had already drawn his sword and loped toward the front doors, entirely negligent of the fact that he was a librarian. He disappeared for a moment, and it took all of Rami's reserve to stand guard in front of the gathered scholars rather than chase after him. He reappeared, sword lowered and face perplexed, a moment later.
"The hallway is clear."
"No demons?"
Rami asked cautiously.
"Not a one. Quiet as the grave out there. I interrupted the gargoyle's nap. What's going—"
Hero's question was interrupted by a sonorous creak, followed by a crack that felt like it rent the earth. A cascade of sound followed as the floor shuddered, stacks of books hitting the floor, wood scrolls cracking and chipping, sheaves of loose parchment fluttering into the air like a froth of moth wings. Rami immediately looked to the floor, expecting a chasm to have split the very ground, demons crawling up from the depths of hell. But the wood floorboards seemed intact. Only venting lines of dust into the lamplight shook loose from the slats. It took time, a disturbance that large, to settle into silence in a space as big as the library. The books had been stirred by the noise, and Rami saw a couple of heads peering out at them curiously from the far end of the stacks. The damsels would be sending a representative in no time. Probably Lucille, Rami thought with a wince. The damsel's elder matron was formidable enough to make even a watcher quail. Claire came skidding out of the stacks, brevity behind her.
"Status!"
she yelled, but no one had an answer. Murmurs came from the librarian's table until Bjorn's voice cut them short.
"The fires are going out."
His voice was low, but streaked with alarm that spread around the table. Hero rejoined Rami, holding his sword out warily for lack of a clear target.
What fires?
Tension inched through Bjorn's old wiry shoulders, as if pulled by a wrench. His hand inched along his waistband, looking for a weapon he'd long since discarded. Bjorn's keen gaze met Rami's. There was no humor in them now.
My fires. The dead fires.
Hero breathed in a curse, and Rami flowed into action. A few steps took him down the nearest aisle, though he was slowed down by the debris of fallen books and dust-shivered vines. The campfires of the Unwon Wing had accompanied Bjorn along with its spirits and made all the librarians nervous until Brevity had managed to coax them into the shielded containers and lamps that dotted the intersecting paths of the shelves. The fall of shadow warned Rami before he even reached the first intersection. The sturdy copper brazier was out. Cold smoke still curled from the embers, casting a strange, frosty anise scent on the air. Rami's brow furrowed as he stepped forward. The floorboards flexed like a sponge beneath his boot. Rami recoiled on instinct, and by the time he stepped forward again, his boot made a small, wet splash. Beads of water, dark and oily, rolled off his toe to rejoin the thin puddle forming on the hardwood under his feet. In the dark, he couldn't make out how far it spread, but he placed the cold smell now. Water. Rami's chest thudded.
Echo?
The unsaid wings librarian and her mystical reflection pool were the only permissible source, and Rami dearly hoped this was the spirit playing jokes. If there was a worse enemy to libraries than fire, it was water. Fire burned, but water lingered, festering mold and rot with a reach farther than the flames. If a fire raged a book to ashes, water inflicted the trauma of bloated corpses of stories long after the ground had dried. The library was a magical entity. Thankfully, the dead needed no water closets. It had no plumbing to speak of, except the niceties conjured by the damsels out of their own books. Even Claire's beloved tea was steeped from a kettle that never emptied. There should be no real water in hell. An icy feeling nipped at his toes as the water penetrated the lining of his boots. There was definitely water in hell. His toes were soaked through by the time he returned to the front lobby.
There's flooding.
His warning was unnecessary. The water only puddled in the seams of the floorboards here, but already the librarians were in action. The Duat librarian was hurriedly rolling up the unmade rugs, slinging them across any higher surface at hand. Brevity had marshaled several others to relocate the books and scrolls that had stacked up on the floor for lack of space. Hero had enlisted the gargoyle, who was attempting to lever one of the tall standing shelves up without spilling its inhabitants, unsuccessfully. It was an operation both efficient and pointless. The library was an endless sprawl of shelves and stacks. The water would outpace any efforts. Even if it never reached the lowest shelf of the stacks, it would snatch hundreds of books from their hands. At the eye of the fruitless activity, Claire, hunched over the desk, flipping through the librarian's log with a desperate fervor. "The wards," she explained, not looking up as Rami joined her. "The wards fell just before. This has to be Malthus's doing. If we can get the wards up again, the water may stop."
Why would she want to flood the library?
Invasion didn't work for Andras. Malthus is more clever. Claire raced her finger down one page, then another, searching. She was too occupied to see Andras frown in offense from where he idled in an armchair. She doesn't care about preserving the stories. She intends to make us surrender to her.
Flood you out.
Andras had a petulant, if thoughtful, look on his face.
You would surrender before seeing the entire library flooded and lost. And even if you didn't, a waterlogged book is unreadable, but still useful. Only for a demon.
Hero gave a full body shudder before continuing to stack boxes of scrolls on top of a chair.
A story needs to know how it goes, too. If the ink runs, we could forget who we are. Ink.
Rami jolted as a thought ran through him. He lunged, throwing Claire over his shoulder. She barely had time to squawk before she was deposited, gently, if urgently, on top of the desk.
Explain yourself this instant,
Claire fumed as he stepped back.
Ink. There could be unwritten ink in the water, or it could bleed from the books.
Just one drop of unwritten ink had been enough to corrupt Hero's book and nearly kill Brevity. It had stained Claire with a bleak possession of souls that she was still haunted by. The fury fell from Claire's face, and reassured that she wouldn't move, Rami turned to help Brevity up to perch on a side table. When he spun around again, Hero stopped him with a raised hand.
I get the idea. No need to manhandle me, you brute.
He clambered on top of a chair and joined Claire on top of the desk with all the awkward dignity he could manage. Bjorn was quick to catch on and took refuge on top of a carpet-cluttered table. Echo gathered her own pond around her and her children in a way that made it crest at the edges, like a wall. The other librarians had no idea of the threat of unwritten ink and what it could do to a mortal or a spirit, but they more or less followed suit. Soon the furniture of the front lobby was dotted with a particularly anxious and awkward flock of librarians. They all regarded the floor with new apprehension. The water seeped slowly, gathering in puddles no more than an inch deep, but already murky with malice. Only Rami had been able to touch the ink, however briefly, and remain unaffected. Even so, the chill seeping into his boots felt vicious and biting cold.
But we can't just do nothing, Brevity said plaintively.
The collection is too big, Claire muttered desolately. Hero looped an arm around her shoulders with an ease that was still new between them. It appeared a comforting gesture, but Rami suspected Hero was also braced to hold Claire back from whatever ill-advised heroics typically followed despair in Claire's brain.
We can't save it by hand.
The streak of certainty in her voice was bitter, and there from experience.
But we're librarians. This isn't just one wing, this is the entire library. We have to do something.
Brevity's voice threatened to break. The water had crept up to Rami's ankles. It was an uneven, murky pool across the floor now, floorboards quickly disappearing. It hadn't reached the bottom row of the library shelves yet, but a quick calculation said they had minutes, not hours. The librarians had been efficient in sweeping up any stacks of books scattered around the front lobby, but Rami knew that somewhere deeper in the stacks, books and scrolls that had settled on the floor were taking on the first damage to their ancient pages. Bleeding ink, disintegrating paper, soggy vellum that would warp and stick to each other like decaying mulch. It would be a slow and agonizing death by water.
We ain't just gonna give up, dangerous or no.
It was Bjorn this time, who looked ready to jump into the low tide. Rami tensed to stop him.
They're librarians, still.
Librarians, Will, Echo said, in the warped mockingbird speech she had. The edges of her pond frothed, still a clear Mediterranean blue that held back the gray floodwater. Pallas slept on, unperturbed, at her feet, and Iambe stood protectively in front of him. Fractious as that library wing's relationship was, it appeared they united against threats like any family. Echo stared past Rami, gaze locked on Brevity, expectantly. Rami couldn't do the same. Looking at Brevity was like watching a heart break in real time. She'd only just become comfortable with the mantle of librarian in time to lose it. The cherry floorboards, spongy with water, were her choice, and the dizzy little fairy lights overhead reflected on the water's surface. All of it, the library of Brevity's making. Librarians and Will. Echo's words chased the tail end of that thought. Rami sloshed his way over to where Brevity was perched.
Change it.
Brevity blinked her watery eyes in confusion, first tears forming. Rami took her hand urgently.
Change it. The library. This is your wing that we're sheltering in. A wing changes to reflect its librarian, does it not? Tell it to change. Protect the books.
I don't know how,
Brevity protested. She dropped her voice, hoarse with creeping fear.
It just did it on its own after Claire left. I didn't really control it.
You wished for spiderwebs,
Rami reminded her. Brevity had confessed the idle fancy in the weeks after they'd escaped the Dustwing. It had taken some looking, but Rami had begun to notice faint gossamer puffs hidden in the nooks of the very deepest parts of the library. Maybe they'd always been there, but Rami chose to believe not. He gripped her fingers.
Wish for something else.
Brevity's eyes widened, even as her small pointed features remained frozen in place. For a moment, Rami feared the common thing would happen. Anxiety and fear would overwhelm the muse's ability to create. It was a real battle, and Rami could see the ground lost and gained in the way Brevity's breath sped up to a gallop. But then, an uncommon thing happened instead. Brevity didn't become less anxious, not that Rami could see, at least, but he could track the shift. Her eyes squeezed closed briefly, then opened. They were still bright with spinning fear, but also sharp with focus.
Will you help me?
Her voice was small, but steady. Rami was doubtful of how much help he could be, either as a watcher or as a former assistant librarian to the Arcane Wing. But rather than voice that, he nodded firmly and loosened his grip on her fingers. Brevity pressed her palm against his and breathed deep. Frosty flood still nettled its way up Rami's ankles. The hem of his trousers had turned heavy with water. It amplified the small shudder that spread across the water as something in the depths of the library roused. The air stirred with the peppery smell of old paper and time. It drifted and mixed with the moss and oak swamp water to sharpen into a breeze that stirred the feathers in Rami's coat. Brevity's fingers tightened around his. The knuckles went from propane blue to white, then relaxed.
Try,
Rami started, but the rest of the encouragement stuttered in his throat as the water crested up his legs like a tide. His heart stuttered. No, they were too late. The water was rising too fast. But then the water sloshed away again. He traced the origin of the wave back to the towering shelves of the library. Wood flexed, books breathed, and grew. The library grew, like a plant unfurling before the sunshine. Brevity's rose-stained shelves trembled, disturbing the floodwaters as they reached.
spindly legs like tendrils of the vines that draped them, shot out from the bottom of the stacks. The rails along the shelves just barely managed to keep the books in place as the rows of the library stacks grew taller, raised on legs that curved and coiled into complicated, vaguely eerie, graceful arches. Farther into the shadows, a commotion echoed against the rafters. Wet thuds and the faint drip of water muddled into a frothy roar as the library rescued its charges and realigned for a new purpose. When silence reasserted itself, the lowest shelves of the stacks rose several feet above the water on decorative wood legs. What scrolls hadn't fit on the shelves had been rescued from the floor and were now twined in loops of the unsaid wings' vines, like lush literary fruits. The library's rugs billowed from the rafters like particularly heavy banners. The paintings reached farther up on the walls, and even the furniture itself, festooned with stranded librarians, stood on vaguely stilt-like legs.
My God,
Hero breathed, and it felt miracle enough to make even an atheist curse. Next to him, Claire ran her fingers over the desk they sat on, now several feet higher in the air, with disbelief.
You did it, Brev, Claire said.
Brevity's hand twitched, and she slowly blinked open her eyes, which weren't her eyes. The pupils had been swallowed up by a soft shadow, and the iris flickered wood tones, then the shade of old leather, then parchment white, cycling through a spectrum of stories.
The library.
Brevity's voice sang with multiple chords, and she grimaced. The eerie light faded somewhat from her eyes, and some of the natural blue returned to her pallor. She swallowed, and her normal light tone returned.
I mean, the library did it, I think.
The librarian did it.
Awe was a strange look on Bjorn's bearded face. His thick brows knit together and he shook his head.
I ain't never seen it happen like that, though, lass. You are a wonder.
She's a librarian. When a librarian and a library work in tandem, anything can happen. She's a librarian.
There was a chip, more like a mosaic, behind the tone in Claire's voice. A chip of wistfulness. A chip of wonder, mortared together with a deep pride. She hugged her knees to her chest from her perch on the desk with Hero. Her smile was wet and true.
Best one I've ever seen.
Chapter 31. Hero.
A Norseman's not made for land. The walls of this library close in on me sometimes, and gods do I miss the smell of the sea. Telling a story or singing a song isn't the same unless there's the scrape of salt in your throat. Not all my kin were seafarers, but we were all born with the tidal pull in our veins. I was born on a boat. Ha! I thought I'd forgotten that. There's a magic to a boat. You can't stand still, no matter how uncertain you are. On a boat, you are always headed somewhere.
Librarian Bjorn the Bard, 1112 CE. Hero swung his legs where they dangled over the edge of the desk.
As much as I do love a good waterfront property, do we have a plan for how to wish away this water next?
The water was still flooding up between the floorboards at a slow pace, but the library was keeping ahead of it. Not that Hero had any idea how, mind. They never caught the library growing as dramatically as it did the first time. He'd just notice how close the sloshing water was getting to his toes, and then the next time he glanced down,
it would have retreated several feet. Nonetheless, Hero didn't fancy spending an eternity sharing the librarian's desk with Claire while Rami flopped about like a fish below them. The murky water reached up to his ribs by now, and the layers of his feathered trench coat bloomed about him like a bedraggled cloud. The water droplets that speckled his cheek and clung to his hard, rough features were particularly appealing, and he looked like nothing so much as a thunder god rising out of the depths. Not that Hero would say so.
All of you are staying where you are,
Rami said, daring him to argue, and really, he should have known better.
Fancy words from a drowned pigeon who...
Hero paused as movement caught his eye.
Look.
The aisles of the unwritten wing had become tributaries when the water rushed in. The giant bookcases channeled the water with an impossible current all their own. Out of one of these glided a boat. Hero didn't bother to rub his eyes. He'd seen weirder in the unwritten wing, though not by much. The craft was a fine thing, and far above an emergency raft. The boat had a curved prow like a gondola, piloted expertly by a sturdy-looking damsel, and sitting in the center, like the queen herself, was Rosia. Even Claire was too stunned to say anything. The boat drifted to a stop beside the desks, where the rest of them had taken shelter. Rosia looked up, smiled, and stated the obvious.
There's too much water.
We're working on that, Brevity said faintly.
Not to assume, but did you come to rescue us?
Okay,
Rosia said, as if responding to a different question. Her gaze slid to meet Hero's. He didn't like the expectant glint in it.
Well, it's not as if we had much of a choice.
He was the first to abandon his perch and step lightly into the boat. Hero could see more boats now, floating out of the shadows after their leader. Enough for all the stranded librarians. How terrifying.
Mind the gap.
It felt like a river, the water, as they navigated the boat between the legs of the library shelves. Hero craned his head back. The stacks of the library stretched like canyon walls above them.
How long can this go?
He craned his head to find the boat behind him, which Brevity and Claire had claimed for their own. Claire made a face.
Which this? Malphus's flooding, or Brevity's ability to adjust the library ahead of it?
Hero raised his brows and shrugged.
Both?
Forever, to the first, Brevity said, the corners of her eyes crinkled in concentration. And not forever, to the second.
You're doing great, Brev, Claire said quietly.
Her hand tightened on Brevity's, and the unspoken passed between them. But Hero's right, we can't wait for Malphus to tire first.
We're in no position to counterattack,
Rami reminded them from the boat bringing up the rear. Water still dripped from his shoulders and flattened the feathers in his coat like a drowned bird.
You think too small, Watcher,
Andrus tisked. To Hero's infinite displeasure, the demon had claimed the other seat in his boat and sat as if it were a pleasure cruise.
We don't attack, Claire said with a thoughtful look. We negotiate.
Hero scoffed.
When has diplomacy ever worked for us?
First time for everything. We need to send a message.
Claire rose in the boat and cleared her throat.
Bird?
Cursing in every non-language one could imagine peeled down from the rafters, quickly heralding a swoop of dusty black feathers. Bird landed on the tip of the boat, heavily enough to make it bobble precariously.
Claire ignored the waves and discreetly used Brevity's shoulder for balance.
Bird, I would like you to carry a message to Malthus and the court.
For a terrible bird who spoke only in expletives, Bird could express fathoms with her silence and insulted ruffle of feathers. Claire sighed.
No, I don't have crackers.
Bird turned away and unfolded her wings lazily. A pre-flight stretch, and Hero was sorely tempted to see if Bjorn's ghost fires were strong enough to roast a raven.
Fine! Claire stopped her with an irritated sigh. Crackers. I'll ask one of the damsels to bake us one or something.
We already made you boats,
Rosia said, with a prim air from the next boat over.
I'll ask very, very nicely, Claire grumbled.
Bird, apparently satisfied, refolded her wings after a leisurely stretch. She hopped up on Claire's arm and regarded her with beady, suspiciously intelligent eyes. She waited, expectantly, for the message.
How do we even know they will be willing to talk?
Brevity asked hesitantly. She added, a little softer,
Last time it didn't go so well.
They're already flooding the wing. At least we'll be provisioned if they try fire,
Hero noted with a dry curl of his lip.
They'll want to talk.
Even if Malthus doesn't want to negotiate a surrender, there's one thing we have that will get her attention,
Claire said. Bird deigned to allow her to stroke a hand down her sleek back, clacking her beak quietly. Something unspoken passed between the two, and the raven gently launched into the air.
There's one thing you can rely on demons always wanting.
Souls, Rami said quietly.
Power?
Brevity guessed.
Pathetically on the nose aesthetic choices?
Hero chimed in. Bird circled once overhead, disappearing into shadows, then out again. Then, curiously quiet, she dropped into a dive that caused everyone but Claire to duck and startle.
Revenge, Claire said.
A low grunt of discomfort made Hero frown behind him, reflexively. Andras, who had been suspiciously quiet up till then, held a hand to his hair, gingerly patting at a patch of the tiger stripe, while Bird fluttered overhead. Andras studied a wetness on his fingers with a frown.
Your pet bit me, Claire. Poor sportsmanship.
Just borrowing a tuft of hair, Andras. I thought you'd prefer that to a sample of flesh.
Claire paused as Bird perched momentarily in front of her, a clutch of gray and gold hair in one claw. Claire nodded, and Bird launched into the air again, quickly gaining height until she was swallowed in the dusty shadows of the rafters overhead. Hero watched her go.
Ah, a hostage exchange.
Don't give me that much credit, Book.
Andras had recovered his dignity, though a cowlick of hair still stood at disarrayed angles above the widow's peak of his forehead.
Malthus hardly cares for one exiled demon.
Precisely.
Claire was still watching the dark overhead. Bird must have made her exit when Claire turned around to face him with a positively terrifying smile that sent a thrill through Hero. He loved it when she let herself play the villain. If it wasn't so much fun, he'd be worried she was too good at it.
She cares so little about you, she's going to be very interested in your reappearance. You two had a bit of a history before your fall, didn't you?
Andras' cool expression curdled.
Everyone has a history if you live long enough.
I think Malthus will be very interested in our plans for your future, don't you?
You intend to hand me over.
Andras' lips formed a disgusted moo.
We have a deal, pup. Don't think I won't delight in torturing your soul if you betray me.
Torture?
Brevity's head came up in alarm, and Hero narrowed his eyes as Rami didn't react. He suspected they'd made a deal with a literal devil, but he wouldn't have thought an angel, their angel, would have gone along with it. Rami's face settled into a craggy grimace, and Hero made a note to have a very strenuous conversation. Later. I thought you'd be proud, old man. Claire let the threat hang, acidic and brilliant, in the air before dismissing it with a wave of her hand. I have a plan that satisfies both our goals.
A plan? Some ruse to fool hell? My, you have grown up bold, my girl.
Andras appeared to weigh his options for a moment before shrugging.
And what's my role in this plan?
Trusting me. Claire's smile was viciously bright. She regained her seat in the boat and smoothed out her trousers with meticulous care. For now, we wait.
For what?
Rosia asked from her perch. The damsel at the prow was incredibly competent and had navigated their little line of boats down the twists and turns of the aisles of the library, made all the more treacherous by the continually rising water. Ahead, Hero could see a square of light and what looked like a ramshackle dock, composed entirely of emptied bookcases and one soggy divan. The occupants of the damsel suite had been much more industrious and quick to respond in the face of an emergency than their gaggle of librarians had been.
For Malthus to get greedy.
Claire's voice was quiet, her head tilted down over the side of the boat. Her reflection held a frown and wavered as the bleak, dingy water continued to slosh and gather. Their river path emptied out, as Hero had suspected, at the damsel suite. The damsels descended upon the arriving boats like a team trained for the purpose. Several brawny women dressed in homespun helped secure the boats to the dock, while a charming boy offered blankets and tea as the librarians reached solid land. With Brevity's librarian pull for preservation, the damsel suite had responded along with the rest of the library. The threshold, once barely a bit of wood trim marking the door to the damsel suite, was now a block of hewn timber that jutted out like a plinth. It extended down into the depths of the water and had evidently raised the entire damsel suite above the tide line. Hero lingered as the poor hospitality lad made an entire fuss over the state of Rami's soggy coat. It was quite a delightfully awkward show when the boy, intent on his duties, tried to take the coat from him and Rami demurred. The big man finally extracted himself, coat intact, only after accepting enough blankets to swaddle an elephant. He joined Hero at the door with a grimace.
Not a word. That's the delightful thing. I don't have to.
Hero gloated only a little as he accepted one of the blankets and tossed it about his shoulders like a gallant cloak. Rami narrowed his eyes, whether in fondness or annoyance it was impossible to tell, and tossed a second blanket at his face. Playfulness was also a new development that was Hero's fault, and he was so delighted he almost forgot to dodge out of the way. The interior of the damsel suite had not escaped unchanged. The floor felt sturdier, lined with thick mortared slate rather than the more porous wood panels of the library. And it was a hive of activity. A carpentry staging area occupied the corner nearest the door, with several book characters covered in sawdust and satisfaction as they crafted boat parts that Hero couldn't identify. Deeper into the parlor, he could only make out various tables of potions, wires, and weave.
The characters of the Damsel Suite might have started out their existence as poorly written mascots of little expertise, but none of them had remained that way. Characters could grow, change, even with their books still attached. Maybe that was what it meant to have a soul.
Oh, that looks heavy. I can...
It had taken all of 10 seconds for Rami to be recruited into the wood preparations. He fell in easily, soggy feathered coat and all. The lead carpenter, a dour-looking woman with shaved hair, eyed him prospectively before shoving a tool in Rami's hand. A creature that had lived on Earth for most of its history would have to have learned a thing or two about boating, Hero supposed. Brevity was elbow deep in some arcane book repair, with several of the refugee librarians watching over her shoulder. Echo and her daughter appeared to be calling up more vines from their wing to wind and shore up the dock outside. It occurred to Hero that the only skill he really could contribute was making people bleed, literally or figuratively. A poor offering in any real emergency. Perhaps one of the damsels would teach him something. The idea of self-improvement was a radical thought, and Hero lost himself considering the options for a moment. Medicine, perhaps, if he could no longer rely on the superior healing of a book character. He told himself that was a satisfactorily self-serving skill to master. But the second thought, which came quick on its toes, was that the important people around him had the pesky habit of perishing, and he refused to allow more of that. Claire had Andrus cornered in an armchair far across the room, probably committing more delightful villainy. That brightened Hero's mood, and he started to make his way toward that entertainment until something snatched at his coat sleeve.
Reader, you will come.
Rocia was still a wraith child, half Victorian Gothic and half nightmare elf, dainty and ethereal. But she felt as if she took up more space since she'd lost her book. The Rocia that had emerged out of the pool was less flighty, more solid and thoughtful. She held on to Hero's sleeve without a hint of reproach as he frowned at her.
I really don't know what you could possibly have to do with me, Hero said.
He should feel a kinship with Rocia, the only other character who had seen her book destroyed, dissolved into the unwritten ink, and remained material and whole. Instead, he felt uneasy around her.
The realm, the guide, the librarians, you are the reader. Your job isn't done.
Rocia may have become less of a ghost, but it hadn't diminished her proclivity for eerie pronouncements. She gestured vaguely at the room and looked at him expectantly. Hero glanced away uneasily, but the others of his strange people were deep in new tasks. He was the sole idle person in a hive of rather irritating competence and productivity. Might as well. Hero sighed and gestured to Rocia.
Lead the way, spirit.
Rocia beamed up at him. Less innocent, but more satisfied than she used to be, and the wall behind her, which had been a solid set of shelves, now sported a narrow hallway. The damsels working near it didn't even appear to notice the change and merely moved as their tables and settees were abruptly a meter shifted. Rocia didn't release her grip on his sleeve as she turned and tugged Hero away from the hum of a library in the act of rebellion. Chapter 32. Hero. A realm. I knew I was never going to find a realm. I'm not sure what I was thinking. I had probably hoped that, banded together, the library could claim some kind of public commons. In my wildest fantasies, I imagined a benefactor. Perhaps Elysium's heroes would welcome us into their green fields, and I could feel the sun again. But I knew we were never going to find a realm. The only home we had was the one we carried with us. Librarian Poppaea Iulia, 48 BCE. The damsel suite had started as an underutilized reading room, a handy place for detaining the most stubborn of characters who escaped their books, which soon evolved into a kind of refugee center for misused characters, damsels, sidekicks, love interests, to live more of a life than their stories allowed. Under Claire's and Brevity's tenure, it had grown into a suite of rooms, then a complex that sprawled and grew to match the inhabitants' needs. The unwritten wing appeared to approve of their continued presence, however much Claire had objected to the risk of unwritten books changing. The result was a cozy amalgam of architecture. Rocia led Hero down a narrow passage with wood panel that matched the main lounge, but quickly turned down a set of iron spiral stairs, through an industrial workshop, and a pace down a round hallway apparently built for hobbits. Hero emerged at the other end with a backache and was still stretching the kink out of his shoulders when Rocia stopped at a door and motioned.
In here, if you will.
Hero stepped into a concrete room. It took a moment of muffled silence and discreet warning signs on the wall to identify it as some kind of soundproof bunker, softened with a rug and parlor chairs.
Expecting the worst, are we?
He said lightly, despite his growing nerves.
Not precisely, Rocia shook her head. Some of us come out of our stories with our own needs. Some need space. Even the unwritten wing can be overstimulating from time to time.
Oh.
Hero considered the thick walls with new ideas. Cooling and calm instead of cold. Serene rather than stark.
Should Brevity have a room like this?
Rocia's smile was soft.
She's always welcome. But external stimulation isn't where the librarian's shadows hide.
Hero couldn't argue with that. Rocia gestured, but he opted to lean against the back of the armchair rather than sit. Strange. When Rocia was an eerie ghost child, she hadn't bothered Hero in the least. But there was something about this new, self-composed version that constantly made him feel as if he was walking into a trap.
Are we here to talk about Brevity? I see how you look at her.
It was a jab designed to level the playing field, and Hero did feel a vicious bit better as heat flooded to Rocia's cheeks. She sat herself on the couch opposite and took a moment before giving Hero a level look.
The librarian needs you. The library needs you, reader.
She kept calling him that. And it raised a thrill up Hero's neck each time, a muddle of emotions he refused to unpack.
Of course they need me. Have you seen how much trotting over hither and yon I've done for them?
Hero shrugged, comfortable in his verbal armor.
I should get a knighthood. Or at least a pocket watch and some frequent flyer miles.
Hero had never owned a pocket watch, not in his story, not here, but 1,000 alien concepts had flooded into him since he'd read the stories of the library. For a former denizen of a high fantasy novel, frequent flyer miles was just as nonsense a concept as light-speed spaceships, and not nearly as grounded in the material world. But that's what stories did. Let enough impossible things pass through you, and they gain a kind of reality. Stories grant the impossible
emotional gravity, create new orbits, and your mental universe expands. Hiro found it entirely irritating, in point of fact. If the words were gibberish to Rosia, she was too composed to show it. Her wide full moon eyes blinked at him slowly.
But your work is incomplete.
Hiro reeled back with the offended air of a cat before water.
I beg your pardon? I have gathered every wing of the library in one place. Even Poppaea didn't accomplish that.
If there was one thing Hiro excelled at, it was taking offense. He was still building up a good self-righteous steam when Rosia's next words gutted him.
Every wing except one.
The air in Hiro's lungs was biting. He knew, but he didn't.
What do you mean?
You have gathered every wing of the library except one. And the stories missing dwarf all of us here.
Hiro's spine turned to ice, then to iron.
I am never going back there. I died there.
But I got better, was the way he preferred to finish that joke to others, which served the dual purpose of being entertaining and entirely avoiding the truth.
That's why only you can go back. Only you can speak to them, the stories of that wing.
Rosia looked sad, near apologetic.
Reader, you have one more journey ahead of you.
The silence, the filtered air, the dim lights, it all turned on a coin flip, from soothing to suffocating. Hiro looked away with the taste of dust gathering on his tongue.
Claire would never ask me to go back.
But you will go, nonetheless.
Why?
Hiro was shouting, though he didn't intend it.
Why will I go? Why me? Why not you? You keep calling me reader, like it means something. But you're just the same as me, story without a book.
His voice was thick. He swallowed and tasted ash.
You go to the dust wing.
I am not the reader,
Rosia said.
What does that mean?
Hiro exploded into a yell and realized distantly, ah, yes, this is why Rosia led me all the way down here, comforting my ass. He began to pace.
Tell me, if you know what I am now, tell me.
Part of him felt light with hope. Part of him hoped she would, right there. That Rosia would use her eerie wisdom and explain, give a name and understanding to the book-shaped hole he was now. Tell him his place in the story again. Fate had never been that kind to Hiro. Rosia tilted her head.
You are Hiro.
A frustrated groan rose in his strangled throat, and Hiro collapsed on the armchair to dig his hands through his hair.
I'm not what you think I am.
Rosia was unperturbed. She advanced on him.
Anyone can be a reader. Everyone is a reader from the start. We are what stories we tell ourselves, the ones we choose to believe in. Being the reader isn't about reading stories. It's about sharing them.
I didn't.
You listened to the dust wing. The stories sang to you, lingered, passed through, and left a haunt in their wake. You carry every story with you now. You lost your own story, but you gained millions of others.
Rosia took a breath and paused, as if crossing an important boundary line.
Will you help others find their own?
I have no idea what you're talking about,
Hiro said, faint with resignation because he knew the shape of the plot he was in.
His story sense was excellent, and he knew when a weird woman started talking about fate, it was already too late.
You will. You just haven't read that far yet.
Rosia nodded to herself with some satisfaction.
The library won't be complete unless the Dustwing joins. Our attempts to rebel will fail without it. Is that what you're saying?
Rosia was maddeningly silent. Hero dropped his head back against the armchair, stirring up a specter of dust that almost made him vomit. He squeezed his eyes tight against the memory.
I thought I was done.
Your story is not over.
Rosia's voice was soft and certain.
I'll go. Just...
Hero felt the tide of messy emotions in his chest. It was harder to swallow this time. He kept his eyes closed.
Just go. I can find my way back myself.
Rosia was silent. Hero barely heard the click of the door closing again before a jagged sob escaped his hold. Chapter 33, Claire.
I suppose you could consider fiction a kind of lie. But you'd be wrong to assume all storytellers are good liars. We're terrible at it. We admit the truth up front. But sometimes, the appeal of a lie is stronger than the one who's telling it.
Librarian Ibukun of Ishe, 787 CE. It was a thin pastiche at best, but it would have to hold. Claire assessed Rami and Andrus one last time before nodding brusquely. That will do, at least for our purposes. Her gaze skimmed wearily over the damsel lounge again and came to land on a figure emerging from between two bookcases. Ah, Hero. She cast a quick appraising glance behind her before crossing her arms in front of her chest. Where did you hair off to this time? Hero was blurry around the eyes. Odd. But Claire could assign that to strain. Who could blame him? And perhaps a lack of rest. Still, the edges of his smile were more false than usual as he wheedled his way into the group.
Rosia caught me. What did she have to say?
Andrus asked.
Cryptic nonsense, what else?
Hero chucked his chin up, challenging the interest in the demon's voice.
Well enough.
Claire really didn't think it wise to foster small talk, but was at a loss for where to direct the conversation that would inhabit less dangerous waters. So when the door swept open and a middle-aged damsel made a bid for attention, Claire was relieved.
The water stopped, the damsel said.
Across the way, Brevity made a gasp that was half relief and followed the damsel out the door. Claire glanced between Andrus and Rami, but their faces were equally unreadable and unfamiliar. She followed Brevity out the door. The dock had grown since they'd left it. Whether it was the sweat of the damsels or the imagination of Brevity's power as librarian, the jetty extended nearly across the aisle now. The more agile among them could have made the leap from the dock to the nearest bookcase of the library stacks. Claire, it should be noted, was not in that category. Claire couldn't guess how much higher the waters had risen, with the stacks growing to stay ahead of the waterline and the ceiling lost in the dark overhead, there was no point of reference. But the churn that lapped at the edge of the dock looked ominously deep, fortified by depths of floodwater as Malphus's attack wedged its way in between the cracks. There was no visual point of reference, no way to tell how many meters of water the library floated upon now, but the ripple of relief as tension drained from Brevity's shoulders said it was no longer growing, no longer forcing her to keep the books one step ahead of destruction.
It stopped,
Brevity confirmed, quiet voice almost dizzy with relief. Her gaze sharpened as she glanced up at Claire.
What's that mean?
The silence on the dock lengthened, settling heavily until all she could hear was the gentle slosh of corrupted water against lacquered wood. Claire scanned the shadows of the stacks, but nothing emerged. No raven cursing on the wing. Her nerves fluttered and she tried not to think about where Bird was. It means our message was accepted. We are invited to court.
Trap, Hero said blandly.
What else did you expect?
Rami muttered.
They expect us to just walk on out of here?
Brevity eyed the water suspiciously. Not us. Claire met Brevity's questioning look with a sigh.
You should stay here in case the waters rise again.
In case the negotiations fail, and the court takes its vengeance anyway.
Rosia had no qualms about stating the unstated. She looked rather calm about the whole matter, unlike Brevity, whose pixie face folded into a frown. Claire had braced herself for protest, or at least the recrimination of hurt in the muse's eyes, but Brevity surprised her with a fragment of a nod.
I have to stay with the books.
There was no regret in Brevity's voice, no hint of bitterness at missing out on the excitement of risk. The yearning Brevity had harbored once, which had burned, which had hungered, had grown into a steady self-confidence.
I am the librarian.
You are the librarian,
Claire said, and tried with all her heart to impart the muddle of gratitude and pride that welled up inside her. Brevity was the librarian of the Unwritten Wing, and hell should tremble at her door. Claire put her hand on her shoulder.
I'll go. I can negotiate on behalf of the library, and I'll take Andras with me.
Moreover, she was expendable.
You shouldn't go alone,
Brevity said, as if she'd heard that thought.
I'll escort her,
Rami spoke up, no doubt in his voice.
Rami, no,
Hero breathed.
I'll go,
Rami repeated. He turned, a smile playing at his lips as he brought a hand up to Hero's face, cupped a little too dramatically.
I have to do this, my love.
A little thick, don't you think? Claire drew a deep breath that struggled not to turn into a sigh.
Fine, Rami can escort, if he feels prepared to face hell now. He'll know their tricks anyway.
Indeed I do.
The angel's smile was sharp. Andras cleared his throat with a disgruntled look. He reached over and removed Rami's hand from Hero's cheek stiffly.
If we are going, let us go.
Cheer up, Andras, Claire said pointedly. This will be a family reunion for you. You're a demon, are you not?
The look Claire got was withering, but Andras straightened his shoulders.
I know my role.
Remember it, Claire admonished, frowning as Rami winked at Hero once before boarding their little boat. This plan was holding together by the seams, but she had no choice but to make it work. She nudged Andras in next and graced Brevity with one more reassuring look before leaving the dock last.
If anything happens, don't wait for us. Protect the library.
Protect the library,
Brevity repeated softly. Claire scrutinized that, but was stopped from asking a question when the boat tipped downward again.
What do you think you're doing?
Claire hissed.
Pushing off. Bon voyage!
Hiro kicked the boat away from the dock with his foot and waved to the gathered damsels with a dramatic flourish before settling in on the edge of the prow.
You didn't really think I was going to let you two go off with that creature without me.
No. It is your duty to stay with Brev.
Claire?
An intense quiet in Hiro's voice stopped her short. He drew a calm look, first to Rami, then back to Claire. His lips pressed into a fine line.
It is not a matter of debate. Not anymore. Where you go, I go.
Chapter 34. Hiro.
I've seen enough revolutions in my time to say it with some authority. Rebellions are built on love and hope. You can't reject the status quo unless you are hopeful enough to imagine something better. Of course, that doesn't make a lot of difference once the killing starts. My homeland was always good at that. It's not such a ridiculous thing to be willing to die for an idea. Sometimes, that's the only thing worth a good death.
Librarian Fleur Michel, 1734 CE. Claire and Rami were curiously quiet the entire way. The boat floated in silence between canyon walls of bookshelves, bobbing gently against the sides when Rami allowed the boat to drift. Andrus muttered quiet corrections in his navigation, but Hiro tried to filter out most of what the demon said as a matter of principle. Hiro had expected Rami would move aside so Hiro could take up a place in the stern, next to him. But Rami appeared to barely notice him. Fine. If that was the way it was to be, the ungrateful oaf could sleep on the damsel's couch alone tonight. Assuming any of them made it back to the unwritten wing. According to Rosia, they were doomed to failure if he didn't return to the dust wing. A jaunt to hell was preferable to visiting the place where his book, his story, perhaps just he himself, had died. Hiro would take damnation over graves any day. He felt a tinge of guilt at the thought, and guilt itself was a novelty Hiro had begun to experience with more frequency lately. He reached for a comfortable distraction. Claire's sour face was a perfect target.
Don't tell me my company is that repulsive, Warden. I've been told I have my charm.
It's not your charm that concerns me.
Claire turned her attention to him with a surprisingly concerned knit of her brows.
Couldn't you have just once stayed behind?
The alarm in her voice caught Hiro off guard.
What? You still don't trust me?
The true question is if you trust me.
Claire's gaze strayed to the other end of the boat, where Rami and Andrus minded the oars.
Can you follow my lead in there, Hiro? No matter what happens?
A glib answer would have been easy. Hiro kept a dozen on hand at any time. But there was a soft fear in Claire's dark eyes that forced him to reach for the truth.
I've trusted you with my life before, and I will do so as many times as you need me.
His voice sounded more fragile than he liked. Claire had that effect on him. Claire glanced away briefly.
I have a plan. But out here, anyone could be listening. It'd be too much to say aloud anyway. You're going to have to trust me, Hiro.
She met his eyes, earnest and bleak.
More than ever.
Hiro closed his mouth and glanced at Rami's back. Surely he heard them, but he hadn't turned around, hadn't said a word. Rami was notoriously close-lipped, but he could communicate 1,000 opinions with the twist of his stoic face. They knew the plan. Hiro did not. He was used to being an interloper, but not among those he cared about the most. This was his cue. It was practically bright in lights above Claire's head, a villain's cue. To extract what he could, to above all protect himself from whatever struck the worry into Claire's eyes. But one couldn't be a villain without a book. The tragedy granted a moment of freedom that was disorienting. Hero took a sharp breath before shaking his head. He discovered the words as he said them.
I am here to support you. I'll follow your lead. You have my loyalty and my word, Claire.
The last time he'd given his word, it had been to Claire. Sour and smarting from his return to the unwritten wing, freshly bound to the library, he'd sullenly promised to look out for its inhabitants. The memory seemed sepia distant, worlds away from the words he said now. He repeated it only partially to himself.
I swear it.
Claire's lips parted, but Hero couldn't guess what she was going to say. He never could. She closed her mouth with whatever it was unsaid. Nodded once. All right, then. The boat jostled under them abruptly. The hallway around them had changed from wood and stone to something glossy and sinister white. The floor rose, or the water tapered off. It was impossible to tell which. And their little boat beached itself against a tile floor.
We're here,
Rami said, with a strange tilt to his voice. Claire nodded to herself and rose. Rami and Andrus were already on dry land, securing the boat with reluctant cooperation. Andrus offered a hand, and Claire frowned at it for a conflicted second before accepting. She stepped up to the prow, then hesitated as she looked over her shoulder. She met Hero's gaze for a fleeting moment. For what it's worth, I trust you, Hero. My life, the library, the books. With everything. She looked away again just as quickly, hurrying on to the shore. It was as near a love confession as they got, librarian and book, author and character. Nobody and nobody, as their roles currently stood, Hero amended silently. Hero swallowed the stone of feeling down as he followed the others down the hall to Hell's Court.